This is number 0025, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and this is indeed the Stuff File program number 0025. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, we'll meet Matt Bailey from SiteLogicMarketing.com. He has studied Star Trek's red shirt phenomenon. You know, the fact that the red shirts always seem to die? Statistically, why do they have to die?
The first thing we found in looking to see what is the biggest overall factor that makes red shirts die on the series. And we found that nearly 60% of the time, if they beam down to the planet's surface with Captain Kirk, they're going to die. And then about 42% of the time, they died on board, whether in a fight with a Klingon or an alien or something like that on there. Then we went to find out, well, what other factors contribute to red shirts not dying? And so we found an interesting correlation that whenever there's an episode where Captain Kirk meets an alien woman, the red shirt death rate goes down to 16%.
We'll also touch base with Ben Patrick Johnson, writer, activist, voice god, the voice of this very program, a multi-talented personality. By the way, his latest book is entitled If the Rains Don't Cleanse. This is a guy who can do anything that he wants to do in life. He's that talented, and yet he's after my job.
I've always wanted to actually, honestly, do a bit of what you do, which is the on-air anchoring, the news anchoring. I'm just so thrilled that you're doing that. And I'm going to put poison in your coffee and take your job one of these days. Watch out.
We'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Plus, we also have an idiot of the day. As a matter of fact, we have a twofer. We have two idiots of the day. It's bonus idiot day, apparently, on this program this week. The guest Slater, by the way, is Karen McDonald, the news director at Global Montreal. And if you want to check out Global Montreal, the newscast with Jamie Orchard is at 6 p.m. That would be the evening news. And there's also News Final that comes your way at 11 p.m. Here in Montreal, you can find it on your cable grid at Channel 3. And for those of you with Bell Express View, you can find it at Channel 234. Thank you very much, Karen, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, it was bound to happen. You probably heard that Toyota has recalled millions of vehicles due to a danger that the gas pedal might stick. Well, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Mikael Valviva was on his way to return his recalled Toyota pickup truck to All-Star Toyota when, you guessed it, the gas pedal stuck and he crashed into the dealership building. The crash caused extensive damage to the truck, but no major injuries were reported. The manager, Joe Costanza, offered to repair Valviva's truck and loan him a car in the meantime, but Valviva refused the offer, and instead he said he wants his money back. Matt McKay, owner of All-Star Automotive Group, explained to Valviva on three separate occasions that the dealership could not refund his money for the truck, and the process during the recall requires dealerships to provide a loaner car while the recalled vehicle is repaired. You know, a lot of people just don't feel safe in a Toyota. Now, if they're offering another car as a replacement vehicle that's not a Toyota, maybe they'll feel a little warm and fuzzy about that, but otherwise, no thanks. I'll take the bus. So now our boys are at a standstill, and we'll let you know where this story goes from here, if it develops into anything or not. And I think I just lost the Toyota account for the advertising on this show. Oh, well, there we go. Okay, to our friends listening in at World FM, 88.5 FM in New Zealand, this story goes out to you. Actually, it goes out to everybody, but the story takes place in New Zealand. You know what I mean. Anyway, here we go. A 19-year-old girl in New Zealand, going by the name Uni Girl, has auctioned off her virginity online for $32,000 to raise college tuition money. While she didn't break any laws, police are worried she might find the winning bidder will want her to do things that would make a Bangkok hooker blush. Unigirl claims more than 30,000 people viewed her ad and that more than 1,200 have made bids before she accepted an offer. Unlike sites like eBay, bidding and correspondence between buyers and sellers on the site inneed.com is private, so it's not known what bids she may have received. Prostitution is legal in New Zealand, by the way, and National Police spokesperson John Nielsen says no law appeared to have been breached, but, and this is a quote, "we would suggest it's not a safe practice." You think so? Okay, still with sex to a certain degree. He may be overrating the experience and significance of the event, but a man who goes by the name of simply Marcus has the distinction of being the first licensed male prostitute in Nevada and thus the United States. Of course, prostitution is actually legal and regulated in certain parts of Nevada, but Marcus seems to think that this is a little bigger than it really is and compared his new status with seminal moments in America's civil rights history. In a recent interview with Details magazine, Marcus said, "It's just the same as when Rosa Parks decided to sit at the front of the bus instead of the back." Let's think about this, Marcus. Rosa Parks' brave stand kicked off the most significant social change movement in American history. You, on the other hand, now legally get paid to get busy. Sure, it's the same. And Marcus, while Rosa was indeed sitting at the front of the bus, I don't think she was on all fours with her ass in the air, but I digress. You're right. It's about the same. Let's move on. Hey, here's a shout-out to Billy Ray Cyrus. What's up with Miley's younger sister? Seems like every time we hear about 9-year-old Noah Cyrus, she's doing something totally inappropriate for her age. Whether it's dressing like a dominatrix for Halloween, skipping around a pole dancing pole, or performing the totally un-PG hits like Smack That, we kind of wonder if she's getting any adult supervision whatsoever. But the latest news really takes the cake. She'll be teaming up with her pint-sized best friend, Emily Grace, to launch a children's lingerie collection called Ooh La La Couture. Yes, you heard that right. A lingerie line for 9-year-olds. Although Emily's line also has an exclusive teen collection available to girls who are size 14 and up. Hey, Billy Ray! What happened to all that God and family stuff? God hasn't appointed me his spokesperson, but I'm relatively sure he's not really pleased about your kid promoting sexy underwear for third-grade girls. What are you, smoking crack, dude? What's going on there? I don't get it. Anyway, moving right along, we go to Michigan. A 62-year-old sledder looking for a burst of power got it when the homemade rocket strapped to his back exploded, burning him over 20% of his body. Oakland County Undersheriff Mike McCabe said the man, whose identity hasn't been released, was hospitalized in stable condition. The man was hosting a Sunday night sledding party when he filled an automobile muffler with gasoline and gunpowder, strapped it to his back, and had it lit, seeking what McCabe called a rocket launch effect. The device blew up as the man headed downhill, causing second-degree burns to his face and right side of his body and possible eye damage. No charges have been filed against the man, whom McCabe said is known for doing outrageous things at his sledding parties. And finally, in this section of the Stuff File, on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we go to Massachusetts. Police say a Massachusetts man who stuffed 75 bottles of body lotion in his pants couldn't slip away from authorities, hampered by slacks that were nearly bursting at the seams. Springfield police say 30-year-old Shamil Guatemala of Framingham was charged with larceny after the incident at Bath and Body Works in the Eastfield Mall. Police say mall security officers chased Guatemala, but he had stuffed so many of the 8-ounce lotion containers into his pants that he could barely run. Police say he could not bend over to get in the police cruiser until some of the bottles were removed. Who had that job, by the way? So he's under arrest, but his skin is oh so smooth. Well, let's get to our first guest on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And let's boldly go where no man has gone before, and certainly where very few red shirts have returned from. Whenever suave Captain Kirk meets a lady on Star Trek, Lives are saved, or so it seems, if you break down the deaths in the iconic TV series using stats and analytics. Matt Bailey of SiteLogicMarketing.com has done just that, using his training to get to the bottom of Star Trek's famous red shirt phenomenon. Matt is on the line with us right now from Ohio. Hi, Matt. How are you?
All right, Peter. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. This sounds like literally fun with numbers. What made you come up with this idea to check into the red shirt phenomenon?
Well, you know, I will say it's the product of a very boring Thursday afternoon. That's how it started. I do a lot of teaching and a lot of seminars teaching people how to better understand marketing their websites and understanding what happens in their websites. So it really, my challenge is trying to make website statistics and analytics fun is really my challenge that I have to work on. And so on a boring Thursday afternoon, I start looking at some information on, I think it was sci-fi.com, and looking at some episode reviews of the early Star Trek series. And I started seeing that, well, this is the first episode where Spock said it's logical. This is the first episode where Scotty said, I'm giving it all she's got. And all of a sudden, my mind just started turning about, well, has anyone ever gone through and really actually counted the red shirt deaths? Because we always talk about it, it's a joke, but I don't think anyone has ever really done it. Which is funny because I deal a lot with this when we're talking with companies about their websites. There's always what we call the HIPPO, the highest paid person's opinion, who says, I think this is what's wrong with the website, but there's never any data to back it up. It's just we're going on assumptions, what people think, and it was kind of the same thing with the red shirt. So that's really what introduced this whole, really a wonderful story that's happened as a result of that.
Now, I understand that you found that red shirt deaths account for a whopping 43% of casualties compared to only 6 yellow shirt deaths and 5 blue shirts.
Yes. Yeah, and what's amazing is a lot of that happens in the second and third season of the original series and not so much in the first season. And then just the intertwined relationship from there. So we found out, you know, and that's the first pass at the data was finding out, yes, that's exactly what happened is there definitely were more red shirt deaths than anything else. But then, you know, like a good analyst, they don't stop there. They want to know why. And so that's where we teach people how to, you got to look at the segment, and then look at the factors that affect the segment. So the first thing we found in looking to see what is the biggest overall factor that makes red shirts die on the series, and we found that nearly 60% of the time, if they beam down to the planet's surface with Captain Kirk, they're going to die. So that's a pretty hefty number there.
Yeah.
And then about 42% of the time, they died on board, whether in a fight with a Klingon or an alien or something like that on there. So we found that basically whenever the red shirts are in the line of fire, that contributes to their high death rate. Then we went to find out, well, what other factors contribute to red shirts not dying? And so we found an interesting correlation that whenever there's an episode where Captain Kirk meets an alien woman, the red shirt death rate goes down to 16%. And really, I think one of the things we found more recently, too, is if the alien woman is green, no red shirts die.
So if Captain Kirk gets some, everyone lives.
Really, that, you know, if he's happy, everyone's happy. I mean, that's really what we tend to found. But the business point of all of this is finding those factors that result in improved business factors, and finding those things that reduce your return on investment, that reduce your profits, and finding out what are the factors that help your business or hurt your business, and developing that. So that's what we teach from an analytic standpoint and using Star Trek to do that.
Now, you said you came up with this on a board Thursday, and yet you touch on Star Trek. You know there's a lot of Star Trek fans out there. This is up on your blog, on your website. What was the reaction, or what has the reaction been from people once you did this?
You know, it's been across the board reactions. I've been implementing this into my presentations for about, I'd say probably about 2 years before I put it up on the blog. But as soon as I got it up on the blog, the reactions are, you know, this is amazing. I feel like I understand statistics now. To the other side of the data geeks and the Star Trek geeks that want to argue about, well, in this episode, the death was off-screen, so it doesn't really count, and then someone said everything is as it was, so that means he didn't... That's a little too over the top for me. But I get a lot of Star Trek... I consider myself a data geek, but I get a lot of Star Trek geeks that really want to debate the finer points of the episodes, and that's... I have to pull back and say, you know, that's not the point. This wasn't an expose of Star Trek. It was just, you know, an example of how to understand, really how to display data, how to communicate data, and how to make it work for you.
Maybe next thing to do is the analytics on the mindsets of Trekkers themselves.
You know, I think that would be a lifetime work.
And you know, I notice I did say Trekkers and not Trekkies, because... Trekkies can be considered by some derogatory.
So, I noticed that. That's a little different there. I guess that's a non-derogatory term then.
Exactly. So all of this was to basically teach online analytics. So, and it's gotten your name out there. So tell us a little bit about SiteLogicMarketing.com.
SiteLogic Marketing, really, we're... a small firm. I did a lot of work for other agencies until I decided to go out on my own. And really what we start with is the basis of analytics and understanding what's happening on your website right now, and then teach people what they need to do in order to rank better in the search engines, to get more people to do what they want them to do online and on their websites, and the bottom line, improve their profits. But we also, I do a lot of teaching at seminars, in-house teaching for companies. It's really taken me all over the world teaching companies and organizations about how to do this with their website. One of the most incredible things about this Star Trek example is I gave it in France. I've given it in Spain and Germany and England, literally all over Europe. And what's funny is everyone understands it. Star Trek is probably the only example I could have used that had that worldwide just connectivity of a story. Everyone gets it no matter where you're from. If you've seen the original series, I never realized how worldwide Star Trek was, not just the analytics portion.
Right. And needless to say, the analytics of your site has changed ever since you have come up with the analytics according to Captain Kirk.
Absolutely. We watch that every couple of weeks because we'll get traffic from StumbleUpon or Facebook or, you know, from your program. That's one of the things we'll be able to do is just look up and see from the people that come from your link on your website, how long do they stay on our site? What other things do they look at? How many of those people fill out a contact form? And just, you know, that's part of what we can do with analytics. It's actually kind of scary how much we can find out. And that's part of helping people just understand what clients or what website visitors are your best website visitors. So we watch that article page fairly often to see who finds it every once in a while.
Well, it's an interesting study and an interesting business. Again, the website is SiteLogicMarketing.com. And as you say, there is a link from my site to your site so people can find more information. I thank you, Matt, for being on the program with us, and live long and prosper.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you very much.
Matt Bailey of SiteLogicMarketing.com talking about Star Trek's red shirt phenomenon. Again, you can check out the website at SiteLogicMarketing.com, or you can just go to my website and follow the links. The site is thestufffile.com. go to the What's On page for this show, which is, of course, number 0025, and you can find all the information. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And still to come on the program, we'll have a chat with our voice guy, Ben Patrick Johnson. His latest book is entitled If the Rains Don't Cleanse. We'll also hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Plus, we have not just one, but two idiots of the day. But right now, more stuff right here, right now. When you're not used to driving in snow and ice like we are here in Canada, that's probably not the best time to go transporting your 238 pounds of marijuana. 40-year-old Henry Allen Lowe of El Paso, Texas, had lost control of his sedan and crashed into a snow pile while driving down I-40 in New Mexico. While Lowe is going to be okay, the crash proved to be much more costly for him than usual. That's because police indeed found 238 pounds of raw marijuana wrapped in plastic bundles in his truck. That's an estimated street value of more than $642,000, or in other words, a whole lot of years in prison. Meanwhile, you know, there's a psychological condition called musophobia. That's the morbid fear of mice. And in Sweden, a 59-year-old man has been arrested for using his ex-wife's musophobia to wreak cruel revenge for their breakup. Basically, he pushed 19 mice through her letterbox opening on her front door. He now faces charges of making unlawful threats and animal welfare offenses. The 37-year-old woman awoke to find the scampering mice all over her apartment and quickly called police. The 19 mice captured at the woman's apartment are being housed at the police station, pending the advice of the county veterinarian. Amazingly, the ex-husband is demanding the return of his mice. Sometimes a breakup can be ugly, which leads to our next story, what happens after the breakup. In-laws in Germany will be able to reclaim gifts made to their children's spouses if the couple's marriage ends in divorce following a landmark ruling by a top court. The Federal Court of Justice ruled that a man given around 29,000 euros, or about $40,000 US, by his parents-in-law to bid for a house at auction should pay the cash back after he and their daughter divorced and he got the house. Judges said that the contractual basis of such presents depends on the in-law's children being able to enjoy the fruits of the gift. This basis is no longer applied following a divorce. The ruling is likely to lead to an increase in demands for sons and daughters-in-law to return gifts after a divorce, the court said, if the child benefits from the gift for a long period of time. For example, if the couple lives together in the house donated by the in-laws, then only a part of the gift must be paid back, the court said in the ruling. If the parents want to avoid this and make sure that only their own child benefits from the gift, then they should offer it to only that child, the court added. Wow. Another case of when a gift is not a gift. And moving right along, today's extreme overreaction story comes from Pinson, Alabama, where a 49-year-old man became irritated after he found the pumps at a BP station on Alabama 75 were turned off. When he asked the clerk what was going on, he was informed the station has a pay-first policy and the pumps will stay off until you pay. This didn't sit too well with the suspect, who then returned to his Ford Explorer and drove it right through the station's plate glass window and into the counter. He eventually had to be subdued with a stun gun by police. Hope it was worth it. He's now facing attempted murder charges and resisting arrest. And this one's kind of hard to believe. It's hard to believe you wouldn't notice a 6-inch knife plunge deep into your back, but 22-year-old Julia Popova didn't. She said she didn't even feel it. She was apparently knifed by a mugger on her way home from work in Moscow and failed to notice the gruesome injury until she made it safely to her parents' house. The knife was sticking out just above her shoulders with blood pouring out. Quite a lucky lady, actually, as it was just mere inches from her spinal cord. When she got home, her horrified parents rushed her to the hospital, where surgeons managed to remove the blade without damaging Julia's spine. One doctor speculated shock had kicked in and her body prevented her from feeling any pain. She simply walked home without feeling the knife in her back. Wow. Okay, here's a story we like to call doggone irony. Apparently in Slovenia, dogs are not man's best friend. Police say a 52-year-old man who owns 3 bull mastiffs went to court and fought for his dogs' lives after they attacked and seriously injured a passerby outside their owner's house. The dogs spent 4 years in custody pending legal hearings until they were finally released back to their owner. So the dogs repaid his love and devotion by mauling him to death. No kidding. He was mauled to death. They attacked the guy in his garden and killed him. All 3 dogs were put down after the attack. And finally, in this portion of the Stuff File on the Stuff File program, 37-year-old Michael Terry is tired of being arrested by the NYPD. Unfortunately, he has the same name as a fugitive police have been after. His nightmare started in 2005 when he was jailed for 28 days due to a mix-up with his name, and he has been arrested twice since then due to the same name confusion. Terry said he was jailed for a week in 2008, and his third arrest led to a strip search and 5 days behind bars. The crazy thing is he's already been paid $120,000 by the city of New York as a settlement for a lawsuit. But the arrests keep coming, so Terry is suing again. What's in a name? Apparently, big bucks. Anyway, on to our next guest, right here on
The Stuff File.
If you listen to the show on a regular basis, you already know the voice of our next guest. Ben Patrick Johnson is a very busy guy. He's one of the best-known voice actors on the planet. He's also a model, a bodybuilder, and author of many books, including his latest, If the Rains Don't Cleanse. He's an activist, a humanitarian, and an all-around nice guy. He's also the voice of this show, and we've been lucky enough to get penciled into his very busy schedule today. So here he is, via the wonderful world of Skype-to-Skype communication, Ben Patrick Johnson.
Thank you, Peter. Wow, with an intro like that, if I ever like win any giant award somewhere or sometime, you know, knock on wood, knock on my head, I want you to introduce me. That was the best intro ever.
Thank you, sir. So as I said, you've been busy with all kinds of things, and one of the things we're familiar with, because your commercial runs every week on our show, If the Rains Don't Cleanse, how is the book doing?
The book's doing well. We're sort of in a lull right now between the hardcover edition, which we put out, which typically with certain authors, certain books, you sell a lot of copies with the hardcover. It's a big deal. With others, you wait and you expect to do more sales on the paperback edition, which is kind of where we are with this one for several reasons. One, because you know, it's been a tough economy all over. Also, I've sort of shifted audience a bit. I was talking to primarily a gay and lesbian fiction audience before, and now this new book is much more mainstream. We're talking to, I'm writing for a lot of women readers. So people are not necessarily eager to plunk down $25 to try out something brand new, new author, new, et cetera. However, if we can get them in with a paperback edition for a number of dollars less than that, well, we're expecting more folks will try the book out this spring. We don't have a release date yet, but as it comes out in paperback.
Well, when we do have a release date, we'll need to do a new commercial, Ben.
Absolutely.
Now, the book, as we mentioned before, deals with your mom. How does your mom feel about the book now that it's out?
Mom is thrilled with If the Rains Don't Cleanse. She, in fact, she has, in her sprightly 83, turning 84 years old, really championed the project, and it's proved to be to cement her in my relationship in a way that it hasn't been before. And she's even taken steps like getting the book recorded for the blind and so forth, which is really cool. And she's sponsored some reading groups, and she's been a politically active person all her life. And while this book is far from a manifesto for her, it does, since the main character is based on her ideas and her philosophy of life, if you will, she can go out with this book and talk about it from a rather educated perspective.
So now that she's been immortalized in print, is she the hit of her canasta group?
Oh, let me tell you, yeah, or as the case may be, her little friends, I shouldn't say little, not to diminish anything, her group at the Friends Meeting House there in St. Paul, Minnesota, she is the the toast of the, they all sit around and I don't know what they, it's mostly quiet on Sunday mornings, their worship service. So I don't think one can really be the toast of a Friends meeting group, but sort of the quiet toast, maybe?
I guess so. I guess
silent
so.
Toast.
Silent toast. Now, we should mention a little bit about the book. It takes place in 1950s Belgian Congo, correct?
Yes, it is. During the colonial era, when the Congo was still largely ruled from Leopoldville by way of Belgium or vice versa. And there was it was a long time coming, a revolution. It was, you know, an independence movement, but it was a pretty violent and unruly revolution that came in 1959. And my parents were sort of caught in the crossfire. They were there not on any sort of a political mission or even really a religious one. They were there as missionary school teachers, teaching such controversial things as typing in French and, you know, gym class and hygiene. But as can happen, they sort of got swept up in the mess and made it out by the skin of their teeth just before the sort of terror rained down. And it was a very bloody and a dark time in Congo in the in 1959.
Has writing this book brought you closer to your mom? Not that you were estranged, but I mean, you know, just the fact that you were writing about her and has it changed your relationship in any way, shape, or form?
It's changed our relationship tremendously. In as much as my mother was always a writer and she encouraged me to write, but our perspectives on life, our ideologies, our whole kind of mode of being have been almost antithetical. Mom's quiet, humble. I tend to be loud, brash. I'm a media person, etc. And through this book and through this process, she and I have found tremendous common ground. As I have written, you know, in what is essentially her voice, I have, as one will inevitably do in such a case, found tremendous empathy for that character and for some of the things I imagine she must have been going through at that time. And she, in turn, sees that, and there's been a delightful give and take. I've worked on the book over a period of off and on for 14 years, so it wasn't just sort of an instant thing. But especially in the last probably 2 years prior to the book's publication, there was a lot more intensive back and forth. And I really look at it as a blessing because it comes so late in my mother's life. I mean, she's not young. She's, as I said, 83 turning 84, and I don't know how much longer she'll be around, but I will have had this experience always to look back on. And that's, I think, the greatest gift of this process.
So in writing the book, you get to understand her more through the character. Does she get to understand you more in your process in writing the book and promoting the book?
I think inevitably she does, because as I speak in her voice, there is plenty of me that comes through. And so as she reads it, she's able to see in her own self blended with me. There's no clear delineation. And as I said, I think the empathy and the appreciation goes both ways. Plus, I think she sees also how, frankly, just how hard I've worked on this. And that's inevitably a compliment to her, flattery to her. But then also, I think she's just proud to see that her son has been working hard, you know, on something that's valuable in her eyes.
And speaking of working hard, I mentioned in the introduction all the things that you do. And one of the things I touched on was activists. You alluded to it a little while ago with some of the other things that you've written as well. Being an activist and being also a very well-known voice talent, do the two ever clash?
It's an interesting question, and thus far they have not, my activism and my being a voiceover talent have not clashed. There are certainly times in my career when being an out gay man has clashed with things professionally. Years ago, was hired to be the first host of Extra and then was sort of unceremoniously dumped concurrent to their finding out that I was openly gay. But that's ancient history. That's 1995. And there are other radio things here and there that have come along, but not in recent years. Hollywood and the powers that be in Hollywood seem to have no problem hiring me for voiceovers, at least, to sell manly sports like football and NASCAR and baseball, as well as a lot of kids programming. And again, I think the concerns are less to do with me being a human rights and social activist and more to just various people's comfort level or discomfort level with having an outspoken, unapologetic gay man at the helm of things.
Because I know recently, for instance, just this past weekend, it was Super Bowl, just this past weekend, and there was some controversy over a spot that ran and also a spot that did not run for Super Bowl. And I know from Twitter and Facebook and other places that you brought some issue to that, even though you're the voice of one of those networks.
I did. The CBS is the network where the Super Bowl airs here in the U.S., and I was not pleased to find out that my employer had accepted an ad, while saying that they would, in the past, historically, one never puts anything political or socially terribly controversial on the Super Bowl. It's looked at as one of those days that it's sort of, America or Canada's family day, and we watch this and we are all together. Yet The CBS has accepted an ad from the right-wing political group Focus on the Family. They're a religious political group, a pro-life message, while out of hand rejecting an ad from a same-sex dating site, a kind of a whimsical ad where two guys end up, their hands meet in a bowl of potato chips, and they have a moment where one of them gives the other a great big giant hug as their friend looks on sort of aghast. And apparently they found that to be, not for CBS objectionable. They said, all the ads were sold out. We don't have any room for it. And then by reports turned around and sold more ads to other people. So not so much. Doesn't make me proud. That's not the division of CBS I work for. They're a giant, huge corporation. And I know it's not necessarily brilliant to criticize one's own employer publicly, but I'd also think I'd be a hypocrite and a schmuck if I didn't say something. If I called out concern when other broadcasters or other organizations did something I didn't think was so cool, but someone who helped bankroll me, I just was sat silent about, that would put me in the same league with people that I complain about in government and so forth, who will be happy to take a handout and shut their yap or promote legislation. That ain't me, and I'm not going to sit by and do that. If I suffer financially as a result, that really sucks, but it's something I'm going to have to just deal with.
And we just have about a minute. You're such a busy, busy guy. Is there anything in your career that you haven't had the chance to do that you want to do?
We did a podcast for a couple of years, and you were involved at different points with that. I've always wanted to actually, honestly, do a bit of what you do, which is the on-air anchoring, the news anchoring. We were talking before this segment, and you were giving me some stuff, and I was all excited to hear about it. And I'm just so thrilled that you're doing that. And I'm going to put poison in your coffee and take your job one of these days. Watch out.
Well, Ben, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us. And I want to say publicly that I also thank you for all that you've done for me, especially during my dark times. Your professionalism and also your friendship has been very, very important to me. So I thank you for that.
Oh, your words are very kind, and I feel like I've done very little, but you're very welcome, my friend.
Ben Patrick Johnson, once again, his latest book is If the Rains Don't Cleanse. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page, and you'll find the information there. You'll also find links to Ben's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And oh, by the way, here's that commercial once again with Ben.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo, is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Abidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder, once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
My goodness, Peter, I am feeling liberated.
Like France?
Yes. France is always going to be liberated by other countries. I feel liberated like a woman who just tore off her bra. Okay, maybe not. But you know my point.
Points in this case.
I am not working right now. I am a free man, a freelance man.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You're no longer...
I have left the place I have worked at for the last, what, a decade now, I guess.
Wow.
Yes. I'm a free man.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Yeah, I know. You've been there and done. This is my seventh time leaving the place.
So what you're saying is you can't commit.
I can't commit. I lack commitment. This, I mean, there have been other places, of course, where places close down, of course. Right. You have no choice but to leave. But, I mean, hey, I'm out there. I've got a couple of irons in the fire, and I might even try a new line of work. You never know.
Okay, well,
the important thing, Steve,
because, you know, here you are on the stuff file. So the important thing is, how will this affect the show?
Exactly. I think we're still going to be able to do it. In between me making the fries at McDonald's, we'll be able to do that.
Oh, okay. Good.
Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
Okay, just wanted to check.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to do.
Okay.
Yeah. So, what shall we do? Shall we do a show?
Let's, if you have stories.
Okay, let's go. Dateline, Sandusky, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye, oh.
Wow, you're unemployed, but we're still hearing that song. That'd be
never goes away.
Yeah, that'd be the Buckeye State.
Certainly, what I used to live there, you know.
One of many.
Yeah, I know.
And one of many to come.
One never knows, does one?
Yeah.
Now, 61-year-old Ralph Barr is the new poster boy for overreactions. Police say he got so upset over a mistake on the price of crab cakes that he punched a Kroger grocery store manager several times and spit in his face. Barr was arrested on charges of assault and criminal damaging. It seems the store made a mistake in the price of crab cakes, but offered to sell Barr the first pound at a discounted price, but the rest at the correct price. The store manager said he was punched five or six times and headbutted. Barr claims, what is a headbutt? Does that mean you end up with someone's head in your butt?
No.
Okay. Barr claims the manager hit him with a price gun, but witnesses said that simply didn't happen, and the manager didn't fight back.
Did the guy mark him down?
When I first saw that, I thought of Johnny Dangerously. You know, when he's got the price gun, and he's got the rabbits and the dogs and the cats.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Dateline, Alcoa, Tennessee.
That'd be the Volunteer State.
Yes, I have not lived there.
Yet.
The son of a well-known Alcoa pastor has taken out an order of protection against his father, claiming he was threatened with a gun during an argument at a church over his lack of church attendance. The order of protection was filed by 32-year-old Michael Lewis Colquitt against 60-year-old Joe Colquitt, the pastor of St. John Missionary Baptist Church. And remember, the position you sit in there is, of course, the missionary positions. The younger man told police his father pulled out a handgun when they met at the church to discuss church attendance. He told officers his father pointed the gun at him and threatened to kill him, his wife, and his family. Joe Colquitt declined to comment when contacted by a Maryville newspaper. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing, really, when you think about it.
What was the threat? Was it, if you don't come and see the Lord on Sunday, you'll see the Lord a lot sooner? Was that the deal, or...
Well, that's it. You know, honk if you love Jesus, text if you want to meet him.
Yeah. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition.
Bingo. I love that.
Yes.
Gosh.
Yes.
Dateline, Union Grove, Wisconsin.
Ah, that'd be the Badger State.
Or as we like to call it,
the Cheese State.
Where the motto is,
if it's cheddar,
it's better. Officials at Union Grove High School have made it clear to students, dance dirty at the upcoming school dance and we'll videotape your butt.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Like many educators nationwide, administrators at Union Grove want to curb risque dance moves among the kids and thus have issued official dance rules for the January. This was actually a thing that was scheduled just last week, but they moved it up because bad weather.
Hmm.
And it was supposed to be the winter formal. The rules specifically ban sexual bending and the touching of breasts, buttocks, or genitals. Leg straddling is also forbidden. And strangely enough, students are on notice that both feet must remain on the dance floor at all times. So that, you know, those are the kinds of the rules. That would rule out any performances of the Charleston, the electric slide, the cha-cha, the moonwalk, just about anything. And Big Brother will be watching, of course. The dance will be videotaped to ensure the safety of all students attending. That's the word they sent out. And we, of course, assume that means school administrators could later review the film for potential provocative moves, nastiness, stuff that was initially missed by the monitors. In other words, after a review of the play on the field, sexual bending was determined to have happened, hey, a 3-day suspension. What's sexual bending, Peter?
I don't know, but by the way, the moonwalk, your feet never leave the ground, so that's fine.
It would seem, yeah. I don't understand. I think they're just trying to go after people who want to have a good time.
Exactly, they're trying to outlaw
fun. That
would
be my guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Who do they think they are? The people of... I was going to make a joke there, but I'd better not. I'm not allowed. Dateline. Connect the dots, folks, and read between the lines. Dateline, Madison, Wisconsin.
That'd be the Badger State.
Yeah, which we mentioned before, and we like to call it what, Peter?
The Cheese State.
Where the motto is what?
If it's cheddar.
It's better?
Yes. And by the way, Steve, if you want people to read between the lines, they can just go to your blog.
That's right. I think they should go to my blog. Should we give them the where they can see it?
Yes, please do that right now.
Where should we? stevewalsh2010@posterous.com.
Okay. Got that.
Remember, name and the year.
Yes.
That's it.
Meanwhile, we were in Madison.
Yes, we were in Madison. Most states have an official state flower, a state song, a state bird, and so on, but it looks like Wisconsin might become the first state in America to have an official state bacterium. If approved, it would be the Loctococcus lactis. I don't think I said that right, but at this point, I don't care.
I believe that was the Loctococcus lactis.
Easy for you to say.
I know my bacteria.
You scum. It's crucial to turning milk into Wisconsin's famous cheese, apparently.
Of course.
Loctococcus lactis.
Same to you.
The idea still... What? The idea still has to pass a legislative vote, but you know those crazy cheeseheads will make this happen, and we, of course, are going to milk this for all we can.
Yeah, well, you talk about legislative vote. I believe Loctococcus lactis was one of the senators for Caesar, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right. You know, et tu, Brute? No, seriously, this is interesting.
And you know, if I had the name Loctococcus lactis, I'd be a bit upset.
Isn't that the guy who writes the Daily Kos? Perhaps not.
Okay.
Gee, if somebody gets upset, I don't care. they might get angry, but so can I, right? And
yes.
You know what I do when I get angry, Peter?
Yes, I do.
I take keyboard in hand and write a 2-minute tirade.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done that for you today.
Tirade away.
May I? I give you my 2-minute tirade?
Yep.
Okay, Peter, this time I want to take on some websites. You know the ones? The ones that are really not kept up to date? Peter, I hate it when I go to a website to get information that might include an upcoming appearance by a political leader or entertainer, only to find that the latest entry was made months ago. Usually it's under the headline, appearance schedule or latest news releases. You soon find out that the latest news release is dated 2 weeks ago. It's okay, but shouldn't there be something from the event that occurred yesterday? I mean, I know it happened. I was there. And appearance schedules. Wow. The 1970s rock band Heart was one of the acts booked last summer at the Missouri State Fair. I heard that Heart would be among the groups participating, wanted to see the show. That's because I once played Ann and Nancy Wilson as a jock in Canada, and they qualified for what we called at the time CanCon, Canadian content. Anyway, I went to the Heart website to learn the date of the show. Sadly, under upcoming events, there was nothing about the Sedalia, Missouri show. Zip, zilch, nada. I ended up calling friends of mine in PR at the state fair. They, of course, made sure that I had good seats and the rest of that stuff, but I learned it would take place on Friday evening. Perfect. But why must I go elsewhere from the Heart website to learn of the band's performance schedule? You know, if you want to have a web presence, well, let's face it, you have to have a web presence. Just about everyone needs that web presence or you're out of luck. But you have to keep it up to date, Peter. If not, you might as well just hope you keep your wood dry. You know why? Because wet wood is bad for sending smoke signals.
Once again, Steve Walsh getting to the heart of the matter. Sometimes it gets him in trouble, sometimes not. Steve, what is that web address again that you wanted to give out for people to find you?
Please find me at stevewalsh2010.posterous.com.
And Steve?
Yes?
Say those three magic words.
Hit the feed!
This is the Stuff File.
And we're just about done with this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have an idiot of the day. And as I mentioned earlier, we don't have just one idiot. We have two. And to be honest, the reason why there are two is because, quite frankly, they're piling up like aircraft trying to get out of LaGuardia. I don't know what's going on. Sometimes I find these stories each and every day, and I read them over and I think, no one's going to believe this because no one's really this stupid. But the reality is, yes, the world is filled with incredibly stupid people, and they're starting to pile up. So I may have to double up on this show and also in subsequent weeks because I'm just collecting too many idiots. What can I say? So without further ado, let's get right to it. It's time for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
And as I said, there are two of them. Here's idiot number one. Here's a thought. If you ever find yourself getting punched in the face while you're busy robbing an 83-year-old man, that's not the best time to call police and report an assault. It happened in San Diego. A 43-year-old man was allegedly robbing an 83-year-old victim. He had the old man pinned against the wall and was rifling through his pockets when a bystander came to the old guy's rescue. He interrupted the crime and punched the robber in the face. The idiot robber became so upset that he called police to report an assault. So all three waited around for the police to arrive and then told the officers what happened. And of course, only our robber friend was arrested. The moron. Okay, idiot number two. We take you now to Crestview, Florida, for the crowning of our Idiot of the Week award. Alas, police won't give us her name, but we do know she's a 51-year-old and was arrested for calling 911 four times in 90 minutes to complain that her husband had taken her cell phone and wouldn't give it back. When a deputy went to the woman's home after the third call and told her to cut it out and warned her against calling 911 for non-emergency situations, she nevertheless called again anyway and as a result got arrested. And here's the big bonus. Here's what really makes her the idiot of the day. When she was searched prior to being placed in the patrol car, the phone was found in her jacket pocket. We don't know her name. We know she's in Crestview, Florida. We know she's 51 years old. And even though we don't know her name, we still know she's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Number 0025 is the number of the show. You can find the website at thestufffile.com. That's stuff spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's S-T-U-P-H, thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding number for this program, as I mentioned, number 0025. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. Follow me, won't you? We hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including cyberstationusa.com and World FM 88.5 FM in New Zealand. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Guests of the Stuff File program stay at their own homes.
Trust me, I'm the voice for this program. I know there's no budget for accommodations. I'm reading this on a futon.